The Barbarian Tribes of Rome. The Scythians. Scythian Conquests. Now, the start of the known Scythian conquest comes in the form of their incursions into the Caucasus and the Near East, which was already covered earlier on. However, perhaps the most significant military achievement of the early Scythian history is the epic tale of how they managed to defeat the military incursion of the mighty Persian king Darius I into Scythia around 513 BCE. King Darius I, along with his great army, according to Herodotus, 700,000, but in reality would probably have been a much, much smaller number, tried to subdue the Scythian tribes and thus stabilize his empire's border region with Scythia. He was met with a tribe of fast horse warriors who used guerrilla tactics to weaken his army and avoiding open confrontation. They also applied scorched earth tactics, destroying and burning everything as they evaded Darius's army, making it so that Darius I could not live off the land. This lasted the whole campaign, and the two forces would not engage each other in direct confrontation, at least as far as we know. However, Darius's efforts would be somewhat effective as they managed to subdue the subject people of the Scythians, such as the Budini along the Black Sea coast. While the scorched earth tactics may have been effective in helping to end the Persian attack, according to Herodotus, the Scythians ended up destroying most of their better land. At the end of the Persian incursion, the Persians effectively controlled the major ports of the Black Sea, such as the city of Olbia, although this came at the cost of many Persian lives by the lack of supplies and tactics of attrition on the part of the Scythians. The end of this military debacle also brings about the written silence, since the Scythians would not be mentioned again in classical sources until the campaign of Philip II of Macedonia in 329 BCE. Now, in 339 BCE, the Scythian king Aetius, a 90-year-old, became known for his military incursions into Thrace. He was successful at first and managed to conquer the important areas of Geta, a Thracian tribe that occupied the small area south of the Danube, the fortified settlements of Impolia, modern-day Plovni in Bulgaria, but he was ultimately defeated and killed by the Macedonian king Philip II, father of Alexander the Great. The aftermath of Aetius' defeat was the capture of 20,000 women and 20,000 horses. Although the defeat weakened the Scythian hold on their western territories and the Getae managed to cross the Danube into their lands, their civilization would thrive until the latter half of the 3rd century when their hold on the east, the Eurasian steppe, was seriously challenged by the Sarmatians and then the Celts. This effectively ended the Scythian domination of the Eurasian steppe and pushed them into two smaller separate kingdoms, known as the Crimean Little Scythia and the Thracian Little Scythia. In 329 BCE, a young Macedonian general named Alexander conquered the whole Persian Empire, which was under the rule of Darius III. After this, he thought to solidify his conquest and expand into India. At the southern bank of the river Jaxartes, modern-day Syrdarya, Alexander built a city to delineate the border of his empire. The city was called Alexandria Ashate. The local population of Sogdians, an ancient Iranian civilization, did not like this intrusion into their land and revolted. The people that lived across the Jaxartes, the Scythians, or the Sakae, as this revolt was a great opportunity to loot and pillage the Greeks, so they joined forces with the Sogdians. To end this instability in his northern borders, Alexander took matters into his own hands and personally led the battle against the Scythians and the Sogdians. Since the Jaxartes was wider than a bowshot, the Greek troops should have been able to board their ships and rafts in safety. However, the crossing would be within the Scythian fire range, meaning they could potentially be hit by incoming arrows. To prevent this, a plan was devised. The Greek catapult would be placed right next to the shore, where they would then have the range to hit the Scythian forces and continuously fire until the whole army had crossed safely. The plan worked, and in the first round of catapult fire, a Scythian leader was killed along with many others. The Greek archers were the first to cross so that they could protect the rest of the army by keeping the Scythians at a distance. After them followed the cavalry, and then finally the infantry. To force the Scythians into direct confrontation, Alexander sent his auxiliary light cavalry forces to bait the Scythians into an attack. It was successful. The Scythians surrounded the auxiliary cavalry and engaged in close-quarter combats. Now the rest of Alexander's army had a chance to engage the Scythians and defeat them, which they did. The infantry and archers quickly surrounded the Scythian forces, catching those who sought to flee the onslaught and defeating the main Scythian army. The aftermath of the battle resulted in 1,200 Scythians killed and 1,800 horses captured. The last detailed account of a Scythian battle is written in classical sources. It took place between 310 and 309 BCE when the Scythians intervened in the Bosporan Civil War, a dynastic dispute between the heirs of the Bosporian kingdom. Satyrus II, the eldest heir, inherited the throne, but his brother Eumelos contested his claim. Fearing persecution from his older brother, Eumelos fled the capital and was offered refuge by the Saraches, a tribe of Sarmatians who seized the opportunity to gain influence in the Bosporus and try to take the lands from the Scythians. The kings of Saraches, Apharnes, and Eumelos allied with one another and gathered a force of 20,000 horsemen, 22,000 infantry. Satyrus responded by mobilizing an army of 2,000 Greek troops and a similar number of Thracian mercenaries. However, the core of Satyrus' army was made up of 10,000 Scythian horsemen and 20,000 Scythian foot soldiers. The Bosporian army, 34,000, was at a disadvantage since it was outnumbered by Saraches with 42,000. The situation was aggravated by the lack of forage for the Scythian horses, which had to be carried by wagon on a long and slow supply train. When they reached the Sarachan army, they found the enemy on the north flank of the river Thatis, ready to engage in battle in a more advantageous position. Satyrus made the bold move of crossing the river to attack them, using the wagon supply trains to make a fortified camp, which they could defend until the whole army had crossed. This move was surprisingly successful, and once all the forces were ready, he immediately drew them to the front of the makeshift fort. Ready to face Saraches, Satyrus placed the Greeks and Thracian troops in the right wing of his battle line, some of the Scythian cavalry and infantry in the left wing, and the heavy Scythian cavalry in the center. We know little of the Sarachan battle line, however. We can only assume that Eumelos and their cavalry were on the left flank, facing the Greek and Thracian mercenaries, with the infantry on the right flank, with Aripharnes in the center with his heavy cavalry. The battle was fierce, and both sides suffered heavy losses as soon as it began. Eumelos met with success against the Greek and Thracian mercenaries, causing them to waver. But at the same time, Satyrus and the Scythians had managed to defeat his heavy cavalry. The Bosporan king watched his left side collapse, quickly moved behind Eumelos' rear, and charged in an all-out attack, smashing him between the Greeks and the Scythians. Having been defeated, the surviving Saraches fled the battlefield and took refuge in a nearby fortress. The Scythian-Bosporan combined might was victorious. The battle exemplifies the speed at which the Scythian forces could move and rearrange their positions to suit their needs. The might of their cavalry and the speed at which they conducted their attacks was difficult to counter on an ancient battlefield and was generally very effective against heavy infantry. And that's pretty much the last battle that we have good records of. And it's interesting to note that if you listen to the way they set the troops up, normally the Greeks at the time of Alexander's death battle for the Alexander's empire put their heaviest cavalry on one flank, the rest of the cavalry on the right flank, and they let the heavy infantry sit in the middle. And in this case, they had the infantry on the left, heavy cavalry in the middle, and the lighter cavalry on the other flank. Really simple. If you have your heavy infantry and there's no cavalry support and they're hit on the flank, they'll just crumble quickly. Of course, it's really aggravating for infantry standing in a phalanx position to just be rained upon with arrows and you can't do anything. Get close enough to them. If you run out and break formation, then it really will commit you to being in trouble. Now, the sources for this: The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture by Owen, Civilization of the Celts by Launay, and The Civilization of the Steppes by Conrad. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.